Okay, so we're live. All right, welcome back. We're learning Perek Yud Gimel and Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Tonight's shiur is sponsored by Susan and David Graber. So thank you very much for the sponsorship. And let's get started. Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Aleph. So we have Shaul has cemented his rule. He's now the Melech Yisrael. He's accepted universally at this point. And we have an interesting pasuk as the first pasuk of Perek Yud Gimel. Ben Shana Shaul B'malcha. So Shaul is a year into his rule, into his kingdom. Ushtei Shanim Malach Al Yisrael. And he ruled over B'nai Yisrael for 2 years. Exactly, right? That's the question. Huh? What does that mean? Right? Shaul was a year into his rule, and he ruled over B'nai Yisrael for 2 years. It sounds like it's almost an inherent contradiction. Which one is it?
So he was a year into his rule.
Right.
And the total of his rule is 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So why can't you? Isn't that the way they have the rest of Malachim? Later on, in Malachim, don't they similarly,
I don't know exactly what the formula is, but that. So that is the Pashup Shat. That's how Rashi understands the Pashup Shat.
How long was he king?
He was only king for 2 years.
That's okay, so this is already, he's over.
Okay, so right. Right, so Rashi says here that what this means, and other Mefarshim say this also, is that the total of his rule was only 2 years. He only ruled 2 years, Shaul. This, what we're about to describe, occurred 1 year into his rule. Okay, so he was already a king for a year. He was there a king for a year. Now, this, what's about to take place in this parak happens. And as a side point, says the Malbim, by the way, his total rule was 2 years. Okay, so that's the Pashut Pshat according to Rashi, according to the Malbim. The Radak has another interpretation of this, where the Radak says he gives that possibility also, that maybe his entire rule was 2 years, but he gives another possibility that maybe this happened a year into his rule and he ruled for another 2 years after this. So that would increase his rule to a total of 3 years, says the Radak. So the Radak is not sure exactly which way to go.
Nowhere else in Tanakh give a yamin that says.
I don't think it's clear. So that leaves it open to interpretation. But he didn't rule very long. It was, according to most Mefarshim, it seems like he ruled for 2 years. Maybe according to this one shot in the Radak, maybe it was 3 years total. But that's pretty much it.
Within the 1 year, why this pasuk here now? Why not say the incident and then say he ruled for 2 years afterwards?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know exactly why. The Mitzudas David, interestingly, has another interpretation of this beginning of the pasuk, Ben Shana Shaul B'malcho, and he says that Shaul did not begin his reign until a year after his anointment. Ben Shana Shaul B'malcho, according to the Mitzudas David, means that he was already a year into his rule after being anointed as king. That's how he understands it. Now, if you remember the process here, Shmuel met Shaul. He basically told him he was going to be the king. He anointed him privately, right? And then we went through this whole process where he wasn't accepted by the B'nai Yisrael as a whole, and then he ended up being accepted. But that was a process. So says the Mitzudas David that this all took a year, right? From the time that he was first anointed by Shmuel to the point where he actually began his reign as king was a full year. That's how the Mitzudas David understands. Now, this is all the Pashup Shat. What's fascinating here is the Malbim says, why is it that this took a year? According to the Malbim, he works with the approach that his total reign was 2 years and this happened 1 year into his reign, right? Which is the Pashup Shat that Rashi says. So, what's the nature of this? Why is this taking place, a year into his reign. So it's interesting. The Malbim says that at that time the custom was that whenever a person was appointed for a position of authority, so they would wait a year before doing anything. They would take a year just to get settled in their position before anything drastic was done, any dramatic changes. They would wait a year, right? Not like, you know, when a person becomes president of the United States, they start issuing executive orders, you know, moments after being inaugurated.
This is the first game. So how did they say that's the rule? This is the first game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but that's what the Malbim says, that this was the custom, right? This was the custom at that time. And he says that really, Shaul wanted to wait. You know, this occurred a year into his reign, but really Shaul wanted to wait. And he didn't want to even fight with the Plishtim yet. Shaul knew that he was going to have to fight with the Plishtim, because the Plishtim were the ones that were, you know, terrorizing the Jews at that point. And he knew at some point, if he was the king, he was going to have to, you know, mess with the Plishtim. He wanted to wait even longer, says the Malbim, to fight with the Plishtim. But here Hashem had other plans. And Hashem is going to begin right away. Hashem is going to get the ball rolling and begin the process of this war with the Plishtim. Okay, so this is all in the level of Pashup Shat. Now there's a Medrash here that some of the Mefarshim quote, that Ben Shana Shaul B'Malcho. So Rashi quotes a Medrash, and other Mefarshim also quote this Medrash, that what this Pasuk means is that Shaul in his reign as king, was like a Ben Shana. He was like a baby that was 1 year old. In what way was Shaul like a baby that he was 1 year old?
No sin.
He was free from chait, just like we say when it comes to Sarah. Just like Sarah, right? Sarah was like, you know, just like at 7, she was without chait, so to at 20, she was without chait, etc. So here, the same thing, Ben Shana, Shaul B'Malcho, that Shaul in his kingdom, in his reign, was like a Ben Shana, in that there was no sin. He didn't sin at all. In fact, the Radak, that's a Medrash quoted by Rashi, and the Radak adds another Medrash who says that there are three people whose sins are forgiven. A Chassan, right? And we know a Chassan is like, right? And we know for a Chassan and a Kal, it's like Yom Kippur for them. They fast that day, they go to the mikvah, they do vidui, and we say all their sins are forgiven. Okay, it's a new slate. A Chacham, says the Medrash. Now, I don't know exactly at what point, you know, does that happen. But a Chacham also has the ability to have his sins forgiven. And the Nasi. Where does the Medrash learn that a Nasi has his sins forgiven? From this Pasuk by Shaul. Because Shaul was the Melech. The Melech is the equivalent of a Nasi, or Nasi is equivalent of a Melech. Right? The Nasi was the political leader. We had, you know, during the time of the Zugos, there was the Nasi and the Av Beis Din. So the Av Beis Din was the Rav. He was the head, he was the chief posek. And then the Nasi was the leader. Right, also religious, but also a civic leader. So here we learn from this pasuk by Shaul. What's fascinating to me here is that in this perek, we're going to learn towards the end of the shir tonight. We're going to learn Shaul makes his first mistake, and we know Shaul's reign did not last very long, and it was marred by mistakes, by sins, by things where he didn't listen to Hashem. In this perek, we're going to learn he doesn't listen to Shmuel. So the perek, I feel like it's the Perek is sending us a message. The Navi is sending us a message here that as we begin learning this first Perek that deals with Shaul's first mistake, just know that he was a Ben Shana. Just know that he wasn't a bad person. We shouldn't think Chas V'Shalom that Shaul, because he's going to make some mistakes which will lead to his downfall, that he was a bad person or a sinful person. Chas V'Shalom. Shaul was a tzaddik. Shaul was a Ben Shana. Shaul was not a person who had any chatoi, right? We learned in the past how Shaul was an onav, and he fled from the kavod. He wasn't interested in the kavod of the malchus. Shaul was a tzaddik. That's important for us to keep in mind as we learn the psukim, and especially in this parak, as we learn about Shaul's first mistake, to keep in mind how Shaul was really a tzaddik. And that's an important perspective. And I think that maybe that's part of what the Navi is teaching us with this first pasuk and why we begin this parak with that pasuk. Okay. Pasuk Beis. Vayivchar lo Shaul shloshes alofim Yisrael. So Shaul decides that he wants 3,000 Jews, 3,000 people from Bnei Yisrael to stay with him. We'll see at the end of the pasuk, he sends everybody else home. Vayihiyu im Shaul alpayim b'michmas uvahar beis el. 2,000 of those 3,000, 2,000 he keeps in the cities of Michmas and Har Beis El. Michmas was a city, and Har Beis El presumably were the mountains near Beis El, Beit El. The Elef Hoyu im Yonasan b'Givas Binyamin. And there was another 1,000 that was with Yonasan. Now Yonasan is the son of Shaul. Yonasan is the son of Shaul. So there was another 1,000 with Yonasan in a place called Givas Binyamin. Yes, I believe so.
So they mentioned somebody's first name. Isn't that great?
It's a good question. I don't know.
This is
David's
son.
The
Shaul's
son. Yeah. How do we know why the pasuk is referring to him by first name without any sort of?
We don't even know he has a
name. Yeah. Good question. I don't know where it comes from. Okay. So there were 1,000 people of the 3,000. Right, there were these. There were 2,000 who stayed in Michmas and Har Beis El, and another 1,000 with Yonasan and Givas Binyamin. The Yeser Ha'am Shilach Ish LeOhalav, and the rest of the nation, he sent to their every man to their tent. He sent everybody else home. Okay, now. Right now, nothing. Right, the Radak says this happened when they were still in Gilgal. Everybody accepted Shaul as the king. If you remember from a couple of prakim ago, in Perek Yud, so Shmuel told Shaul that I want you to go to Gilgal after this election. I want you to stay there and wait for me. We'll talk about that. Old Bnei Yisrael was gathered here. It was the beginning of his reign, and he realized, there was no purpose in everybody staying here. Nothing was happening, so he sent everybody away. He sent everybody home. Why did he keep this 3,000 with him? So it's interesting. The Malbim says that a melech shouldn't be alone. The melech should not be alone. And the Mitzudas David also says that the purpose of this group was essentially to help him out with whatever he needed, whatever help he needed. They were going to help him. The Malbim says that Shaul was planning to split his time between these two locations, Michmas and Beit El. And he says, even though the Pasuk says Alpayim, but really it was split, 1,000 in Michmas and 1,000 in Beit El. Put 1,000 in each place. And the final 1,000 he sent to be with Yonasan, who was in Givas Binyamin. Okay, so this is like a small number of troops that he wanted to keep with him, just in case he needed anything, in case he needed any help. Pasuk Gimel. Vayach Yonasan es yitziv plishtim asher begeva. Yonasan, seems like almost out of the blue, but Yonasan decides to attack the Plishtim. Okay, now the Netziv Plishtim, so Rashi says that there were governors. The Plishtim appointed governors over different places, over different cities. Okay, and this was the governor, this was the Plishti governor. It says Begeva, and it seems to be a Machlokas Rishonim, if Geva was the same place as Givas Binyamin. In Pasuk Beis, we just said that Yonasan was in Givas Binyamin. So Rashi seems to understand that Geva and Givas Binyamin are the same thing, whereas the Radak says specifically that it's different, that Geva and Givas Binyamin are two different places. Okay, but be that as it may, but there was a Plishti governor in this place of Geva, and Yonasan launches a preemptive attack. Yonasan launches a preemptive attack. It's also not clear if Yonasan did this without instructions from Shaul. That seems to be the way that the Malbim says it, that Yonasan kind of took initiative here, and he saw that this Plishti governor maybe was vulnerable, and he said, you know what, I'm just going to launch a preemptive attack. My father's the king now, and the Plishtim have to be, put in their place, and he just decided to launch this attack. But once it happened, Shaul went along with it. Right, once it happened, Shaul went along with it. So the pasuk says that Yonasan attacked this Netziv Plishtim, this this uh, this governor of the Plishtim in Geva, Vayishmu Plishtim. So the Plishtim heard what happened, right? News travels when you attack a general. V'shol toka b'shofar b'chol ha'aretz. Shol blows the shofar. He sounds the alarm throughout the nation. Lemor yishmeu ha'ivrim. To say that the Ivrim should hear. The Ivrim should hear. Now, what exactly does that mean? What was the message that he was sending here? So the Radak says, first of all, he says, Shaul didn't blow the shofar himself. So Shaul blew the shofar. Shaul wasn't blowing the shofar. They had other people that could, you know, that could sound the alarm. But it was Shaul's command, right? Shaul gave the orders. He gave the command. So therefore, it was referred to as V'shol taka b'shofar. What was the message? The message was, number one, the Plishtim are angry. Be ready, right? Be on guard. Number one, the Plishtim are angry because their governor was just attacked. So be prepared and be on guard in case the Plishtim attack the Bnei Yisrael, number one. And number two, we need to call up all the reserves here, right? Because we're going to go to war because there's no doubt that the Plishtim are not going to just take this sitting down. Their governor was attacked. They're going to come and they're going to retaliate. So if they're going to retaliate, number one, be on guard. And number two, I need all the reserves. I need everybody, all the soldiers to come up and get it and get ready for a war. So Bnei Yisrael hear this shofar. They get the message. They understand what's going on. And you see that Shaul was behind this, that even though he wasn't the one who maybe issued the command, issued the order, it could be that Yonasan took this initiative. But Shaul was certainly supportive and certainly behind what happened, and now said, "Okay, let's get ready. Let's get ready to fight." Sorry. Yeah. Well, he figures if their governor was attacked unprovoked, then they're going to retaliate. Right. That's what happens. Right. That's what we see now. Right. Iran. Right. They lost their chief scientist, and I'm sure they're planning something. Right. They're going to do something. That's the way the world works. Okay. Hopefully, nobody should be hurt. Pasuk Dalid, the whole Yisrael shamu lemor. So everybody in Bnei Yisrael heard what was going on, and they hear Hika Shaul les Netziv Plishtim. They hear that Shaul attacked this Netziv Plishtim, this governor. The Gam Nivash Yisrael ba Plishtim, and they also hear that Bnei Yisrael have become Nivash, like have become spoiled. Are now disgusting in the eyes of the Plishtim, right? Meaning if the Plishtim didn't like Bnei Yisrael to begin with, now they didn't like them even more, right? Now they're even angrier and more upset by Bnei Yisrael. Vayitzaku ha'am acharei Shaul ha'gilgal, and everyone gathers, as we've learned many times in the Navi, that the language of Vayitzaku means to gather, right? They used to gather by screaming out and shouting, gathering everyone together. So everyone gathered together in behind Shaul in Gilgal. The Mefarshim here, struggle with the fact that why does it say Hika Shaul as Netziv Plishtim? It just said in the previous pasuk that Yonasan Hika, right? The previous pasuk said Yonasan Hika. I'm sorry, Vayach Yonasan as Netziv Plishtim. All of a sudden, now we're saying Hika Shaul. I'm sorry.
That's not the right story.
Exactly right. Oh, right. So the Radak said that the Radak raises the possibility that maybe Shaul did issue the command, which is not like the Malbim. The Malbim understands that Yonasan took the initiative here. But the Radak says maybe Shaul did issue the command and Yonasan just carried it out. So if the command came from Shaul, then it says Hiko Shaul. That's why we're attributing it to him. Or he says maybe that people just assumed that, right? That if this governor was killed, people just assume Shaul's the Melech. He's probably the one who launched the attack, even though it's not true. The Mitzudas David says more simply, he says it was called Hika Shaul because Shaul was the king, right? So even if he didn't do it, but he's the one who did it. It's like everybody, Osama bin Laden, nobody knows who the SEAL was that did it, but everybody knows who the president was, right, when it happened. So it's the same thing right here. That's a good question. Why does it say the Ivrim here? Yeah, that's a good question. So in this pasuk, I don't know. In this pasuk, I don't know. The Mefarshim that I saw, I'm sure somebody talks about it. I didn't see all the Mefarshim, but the Mefarshim that I saw did not discuss it. We'll see another pasuk that also describes them as Ivrim, and I think there we'll be able to understand a little bit better. Yeah, we'll see. But right now, it's a good question. I'm not 100% sure why in Pasuk Gimel do we refer to them as Yishmu HaIvrim. Okay. So the Malbim also points out here that he also says that maybe the fact that it's that we refer to it as Hika Shaul is because once Shaul approved of Yonasan's attack and he summoned the troops after that, right? Once he approved that, so then maybe that's why it's attributed to him. He also makes a very interesting point, and he says that generally speaking, if you have an individual who does something against against another nation, that's not going to create a hatred for the whole nation. However, if the king does something, here the anointed king, Shaul HaMelech, or maybe his son, Yonasan, issues this command, and they take out the general, they take out this governor, so then that reflects on the nation as a whole. Which is interesting if you think about it, like in the story of Purim, for example, we have Mordechai. One Jew wasn't doing something, right? One Jew wasn't bowing down to Haman. And yet that created, presumably because Mordechai was viewed as the spiritual leader of the Jewish people. If Mordechai was just some little schnook, so Haman probably would have gotten angry at him and maybe, executed him, and then that's it. Shalom al Yisrael. He's not going to get angry at the whole nation because one little puny Jew is doing something wrong. But here, since Mordechai was the leader, since Mordechai was the Gadol Hador, he was the leader at that time, so it reflects on the whole nation. So too here. If it was some guy, some crazy Jew who went and assassinated the governor, okay, so you kill him, execute him, attack him, arrest him, whatever the case might be. But here, where the attack comes from the government, the attack comes from the king, now this is a war against the whole nation, the whole B'nai Yisrael. Or the king's son, correct. Or the king's son. Yeah. Oh, hold on. Somebody sent a message here. Oh, Meish Berkowitz. Rashi and the Radak said that Ivrim refers to those Jews who either sided or lived with the Plishtim. Okay. So there we go. Thank you. Okay. Okay, fine. Let's see Pasuk Hey. Uplishtim ne'esu lehilachem im Yisrael. So Shaul's prediction is correct. Shaul's prediction came true, right? And the Plishtim now all gathered to fight against Bnei Yisrael. And when the Plishtim gathered, they really gathered, right? Shloshim elef rechev, 30,000 chariots. Right? This is a big army here. This is not a little Jewish Jewish guerrilla force. 30,000 chariots, the Sheshes Alafim Parashim, and another 6,000 soldiers, the Am Kachol Asher Asfas Hayom, and foot soldiers like the sand by the seashore, Larov. Vayalu Vayachanu Bemichmas Kidmas Beis Oven. And the Plishtim went up and they camped in Michmas, to the east of Beis Oven, Now the Malbim says that Bnei Yisrael realized they were in grave danger. Okay, number one, just a lot of people, right? 30,000 chariots, another 6,000 right troops. I mean, this was a lot of people here, and they were scared. Bnei Yisrael were scared. Number two, why were they in grave danger? Because where did the Plishtim camp? Bimichmas. And if you remember, we just discussed Michmas. Michmas was one of the places where Shaul was with 1,000 Jews, right? So they're literally camping, like breathing down their necks, right? Literally, like right next, they're not camping across, some vast expanse. They're camping right next to the Jewish city, right next to Michmas. They're trying to intimidate the Plishtim here, and it's working. Right, so Bnei Yisrael are scared. They realize they're in grave danger. Pasuk Vav, the Ish Yisrael ra'u ki tzar lo. So the Jewish people realized, we're in trouble. Ki nigas ha'am, because he's, you know, people saw that they were being pressured, right? They were being oppressed. The Jewish people were being pressured, were oppressed. The Radak says also this happened so suddenly. This was like out of the blue, right? Where Yonasan launched this preemptive strike, boom. He takes out the governor, and now all of a sudden, the Plishtim, you know, gather their troops and camp out now 30,000 strong, right next to the Jewish city. And the people feel very constricted. They feel very afraid. Vayischabu ha'am b'me'oros uvachavochim uvasloim uvatzrichim uvaboros. And the people panic and they go into hiding. And they hide everywhere, in every little nook and cranny. They hide in the caves. And they hide in high places, and you know, in the mitsudos, in the certain traps where they were hiding out. Every place that a Jew could find to hide, they went into hiding. They're petrified. Right? This 30,000 strong force is going to come in and obliterate them. So the Malbim says the Bnei Yisrael, they saw what was going on. Ra'u kitzarlo. He says the Malbim, they felt the pressure. They felt the pressure here from the Plishtim for four reasons. Number one, the Plishtim were camped out nearby, and they were already starting to oppress any Jew that they saw. They were starting to oppress and act as though they were already running the show. So number one, the Jews are getting nervous that the Plishtim already are acting like they won, like they're in control. Number two, says the Malbim, the 1,000 people that were stationed in Michmas, where were they? Hiding. In caves. So there's only like a 3,000 man force here, right? Shaul at 2,000 and 1,000 with Yonasan. 1,000 that was with Shaul and Michmas are now not fighting, and they went into hiding. So that adds to people's fear that here we have 1,000 soldiers who are no shows, right? 1,000 people are just hiding in the caves. Well, no, the Pasuk says there were 2,000 in Michmas and Har Beisel. Beisel. So those were two different locations. Yeah. So the Malbim says that the 1,000 were in Michmas and the Alpayim is 2,000. So 1,000 was in Michmas and 1,000 was in Har Beisel. Correct. No. Because there were two locations. Shaul was in two places. Yeah, the Malbim says Shaul split his time between Michmas and Har Beisel, 1,000 each. And then Yonas another 1,000, that's a total of 3,000. Exactly right. Okay? Now, so the Ivrim, says the Pasuk, the Ivrim, Ovru es Hayardain, Eretz God v'Gilad. Okay, now this is why I thought they were called the Ivrim, but again, this only explains this Pasuk and not the one before. But in Pasuk Zion, it calls them the Ivrim. Why? They hightailed it right out of Eretz Yisrael. They chickened out. They were so scared. This group was so scared, right? They literally ran for the hills. They crossed the Yarden and they went back to the Eber HaYarden, right? They went back to the Eretz of God and Gilad, right? Gilad is from Menashe, right? So we know in Eber HaYarden you have Reuven, God, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, right? So they went to the half of Menashe. They went to God. The Mefarshim say they didn't get to Reuven. The Radak says maybe Reuven was too far. Reuven was maybe the farthest. And so they just crossed the Yarden. They went to the closest areas right across the Yarden. But here it's, you know, they literally, they're running for the hills. V'sha'ul odenu ba'Gilgal. Okay, now Sha'ul is still in Gilgal. V'chol ha'am chardu acharav. And the entire nation is literally chardu. They're trembling behind him. Okay, now what does this mean? So the Mefarshim say that, you know, the Rashi and the Radak seem to say that some of the people fled. They crossed the Yarden with Eber HaYarden. And the other people hurried, ran, you know, behind Shaul. And were kind of like cowering behind, you know, let's go to the king. You know, that's the safest place around here is behind the king. So let's run to where Shaul is and let's go hide, you know, with Shaul. Now the Metzudas David points out in the Malbim also that Shaul had not yet left to battle. Right? Meaning you have 30,000 people camping across the way, and Shaul is still Odenu Bagilgal. Right? So the Pasuk seems to imply, says the Mefarshim, that Shaul was dilly-dallying a little bit. Right? He wasn't rushing into this battle. Now you could say, well, he wasn't rushing because he was maybe a little bit nervous. Right? but he wasn't rushing into the battle. And the Malbim says that these were another two reasons why, as we said in the previous pasuk, the Ish Yisrael ro kitzarlo. Because number one, the people see that, this is number three, the people see that the people are fleeing across the Yarden. You have literally, like, it's like the migrants, you know, everybody's running across the river. And number four, that people see that Shaul's not mobilizing, right? How far away is the I don't know exactly. I mean, Gilgal, I don't think it was all that far. I don't think it was all that far. But he was still in Gilgal. In fact, the Malbim says, so some of the Mepharshim understand Chardu Acharav, they were scared. They ran after him. They hurried after him because they were scared. Says the Malbim, no, they weren't scared. They wanted him to do something. They were running after him to say, hey, Shaul, you got to, you know, new. You can't just sit here. You're going to get wiped out. You got to attack. You got to do something. Maybe he was ready for Shaul. Oh, okay. So let's see. So Pasuk Ches. Vayochel Shivas Yomim Lamoid Asher Shmuel. So Shaul waits 7 days for the time that Shmuel, and Mepharshim all say this Pasuk doesn't read very well. You have to read it Asher, you know, the time that Shmuel had established. Now, if you look back at Perek Yud, Pasuk Ches, exactly, Shmuel told Shaul, you're going to go to Gilgal, and you're going to wait 7 days. We had a question in the Mepharshim there, how to understand it. Was it, you know, did he wait before, did he wait after? But essentially, the Mepharshim say that Shaul was told to wait 7 days, and then after the 7 days, Shmuel's going to come, and then once Shmuel comes, then I'll tell you what to do, Shmuel said, right? However, v'lo ba Shmuel Agilgal. But Shaul looks, he's looking down the road, he doesn't see Shmuel coming. He waits the 7 days, it's day seven, he's looking and looking and looking, and Shmuel's not here. Vayofet ha'ame alav. And the people start to leave, right? The people start to leave, they're worried, you know, he was worried, they're worried, he's worried, everybody's worried, right? Vayofet ha'ame alav. They start leaving. The Pushim have not attacked yet. Pasuk Tes, and we'll come back to Pasuk Tes in a minute also. Vayomer Shaul hagishu elai ha'ola v'hashlamim vayal ha'ola. So Shaul says, okay, time to bring karbanos. Why is he bringing karbanos? You're going to go to battle, right? You have to bring karbanos first. You have to bring karbanos before you go to battle. You want a Kodesh Baruch Hu on your side. So Shaul says, bring me the Ola and the Shlomit. Okay, he brings the Ola. Mepharshim point out that even though he's a Zar, he's not a Kohen, but nevertheless, we have a Bama over here. We don't have the Mishkan, and the Mizbeach is not functioning properly. So we have a Bama, and a Zar is allowed to bring Korbanos on a Bama. Okay, but here's where the problem begins. And the Radak says this was his first mistake. First mistake is that Shmuel told him to wait and not even to bring a carbon before he got back. Okay? So now Shmuel's not yet back. Shmuel's not yet back. And Shaul is bringing the carbon. So Shaul should have prepared the carbonos. That's true. Right? But he didn't. He shouldn't have brought the carbonos yet. And here, he decided to bring the carbonos on his own. So this was the mistake. This was the mistake. Now, we're about to see that Shmuel's about to come. So what happens, says the Radak, is that Shaul's looking, he doesn't see Shmuel, he's getting nervous, so he brings the karbanos. But Shmuel said to wait 7 days. That means you have to wait until the end of the seventh day. Don't just wait till the morning and look and see, hey, Shmuel's not coming, okay, let's get the show started, Shmuel's not here, a no-show. I told you to wait 7 days, you got to wait a full 7 days. You have to listen. And says the Malbim that Shaul did not wait for Shmuel, right? Shaul did not wait for Shmuel for four reasons. Reason number one, the two dangers we discussed. Right? So number one, we discussed two dangers from Pasuk Hey. Remember those two dangers? Number one, that there were 30,000 people, and number two, that they were right by Michmas, right? So Shaul's getting nervous. It's a big troop. It's right here. He's getting scared. Number two, he thought Shmuel would be there by the morning. When Shmuel says 7 days, he thought that meant the morning of the seventh day. He looks around. He's waiting in the morning. Shmuel's not here. Number three, the people start to leave. Vayofetz ha'amei alav, as we said at the end of Pasuk Ches, people start to leave. He's getting even more nervous. He doesn't want to be left alone without any people, without any support. And then number four, the Malbim says that he thought Shmuel only meant wait and don't start the battle yet. But he thought he could bring Korbanos. He thought Shmuel only meant don't start the battle. But Korbanos I could bring. Korbanos I could bring. I'm sorry?
He told Shmuel, you wait, don't do the Korbanos, wait till I do the Korbanos. Maybe not the battle, but the Korbanos. Shmuel would say to them, I'll do the Korbanos because I'm the Navi. And
okay, so in reality, that's correct. And that's what Shmuel meant. Shmuel meant that he shouldn't do anything, but he should wait for him 100%. And Shaul is you know, again, the Malbim explains here, there's a combination of Shaul, number one, making mistakes, and number two, being frightened, right? So the way that he says it, the Malbim...
It seems so often we get into trouble because we don't understand the right thing to do.
We
do the right thing, and we make a mistake.
What else are you thinking about? You're right.
Aaron's kids doing Korbanos.
Right.
You could even say the eagle, they had the right intentions.
Right, and they waited, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down, and they miscalculated. Right, Chazal say, right, correct. And there is a lot there in terms of, you know, miscalculating. Now the way that the Malbim says it is he says that numbers one and three were out of his control, right? So number one, the fact that he's afraid of this big force that's right by Michmas, that's out of his control. And number three, the people starting to leave, that's also out of his control. So those things, he's getting nervous, he's getting scared by things that are happening that are out of his control. Two and four were errors. He thought Shmuel should have been there by the morning. He wasn't correct. Shmuel meant wait the whole day for me. And he thought Shmuel just meant don't fight, right? But if you want, you can bring the Korbanos, and that was also not correct, right? So there was a combination here of Shaul making mistakes and Shaul being afraid, okay? Now, this combination proved to be a lethal combination because what happens is in Pasuk Yud, Vayikeh halosola halos ha'ola, he's now finished bringing the Ola, v'hinei Shmuel ba, and all of a sudden Shmuel comes. Vayetzei Shaul likraso levarcho. So Shaul comes out, and Mefarshim said Levarcha means to greet him, to say Shalom Aleichem. So he brought the Ola. He had not brought the Shlomim. Remember, he asked for an Ola and a Shlomim. He just started with the Ola. He didn't bring the Shlomim yet. Pasuk Yud Aleph, and here's the turning point, really, in Shaul's reign, which is so sad because it's been so, you know, I mean, he just started. Literally just started. Vayomer Shmuel Me'al Sisa. So Shmuel looks at him and he says, what have you done? So Shaul responds, I see that the nation has has scattered from upon me. And you haven't come. Right? You haven't come the number of days that you told me you were going to come, you didn't come. And all the plishtim are gathered at Michmas, right? So what am I going to do, right? And he's basically giving the excuses, right? He's giving the excuses for these four issues. And he's saying, number one, I see the people running away, okay? Number two, you didn't come when you were supposed to. That's his mistake. He thought he was going to come in the morning. Number three, the plishtim are gathered at Michmas, I'm petrified, right? And then, Pasuk says, Pasuk Yud Beis, Va'omar ata yerdu plishtim elai ha-Gilgal. So I'm afraid that the plishtim are going to start coming down and attack me in the Gilgal. Ufnei Hashem lo chilisi, and I haven't even davened to Hashem yet. Va'esapak. So I held myself back. Va'ala ha'ola. And I brought the ola. And says the Malbim, this is the fourth one, where he's saying, all I did was bring a korban. I didn't start fighting yet. What are you so angry about? Now Rashi explains also that he was saying, va'esapak. I held back. My gut was telling me to wait, but I overcame the urge to wait and decided to bring the korban. Right? He was kind of justifying himself. He was saying, you know, I had to bring the korban. I really wanted to wait and not bring the korban. But what am I going to do?
You don't bring korban the second night also. You only go
Well, this is in the morning.
Right. So the only brick carbon is in the morning.
Yeah, but he could have, but he should have waited till the he should have waited till the end of the day.
And that brought the carbon, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Rabbi.
Hold on 1 second. Yes. Well, no, that's just that's what Shmuel told him. That's what Shmuel told him. Okay? Yeah, Aaron.
Rabbi, in Jewish hierarchy, who's higher, the prophet or the king?
That's a good question. I mean, this is the first time that we have a prophet and the king.
Right.
Until now, we haven't had a king. We've only had a prophet. So that's a good question. But it would seem that the prophet is higher in terms of, you know, connecting with Hashem. The prophet is higher. And this is the next pasuk. We'll do one more pasuk. And maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more next week. We're running out of time. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer Shmuel El Shaul. So Shmuel says to Shaul, Niskalta, Lo Shamartes Mitzvah Hashem Elokecha. You've been foolish. And you didn't keep the mitzvah of Hashem. Asher Tzivach, who commanded you. Ki Ata Heichin Hashem Es Mamlachtecha El Yisrael Ad Olam. So we'll talk about that maybe a little bit more next week. But the point, just the last point I want to make here, is that the Radak says, I'm the Navi. Everything I'm telling you is coming from Hashem. Right? I'm not making up these things on my own. Everything I'm telling you is coming from Hashem. So if everything I'm telling you is coming from Hashem, and I'm telling you to wait for me and not to proceed before I get there, then you have to do that. You have to wait. Okay? To the point that if you're not waiting, that's called Lo Shamarta Es Mitzvah Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzivach. You're not listening to Hashem. You're rebelling against Hashem. It sounds harsh, right? But Shaul was afraid. And essentially the Musar that Shmuel is giving him is that you, if you're the Melech, you can't be afraid. You have Hashem in your corner. You have the Ribono Shel Olam in your corner, but only if you do what you're supposed to do. But if you start veering and you start doing other things and you start saying, well, I had this cheshbon and that cheshbon and this and that, it's not going to work. You're a king. You're the shaliach of Hashem. You're not a goyish king. You're a Jewish king. You're the shaliach of Hashem. So you have to do what Hashem wants. You have to do what Hashem instructs. And this essentially says the Radak that the Shaul's first downfall, first mistake, was because Shaul was doing a little bit too much hishtadlus and not having enough bitachon. And this is our life where we're always trying to balance the hishtadlus versus the bitachon. How much am I supposed to put in? And how much am I supposed to trust in Hashem? And says Shmuel, you're doing too much. You're afraid. You're afraid. You're this and that. The people are leaving. The plishtim are coming. I'm the Navi. I told you what Hashem wants. Hashem wants you to wait for me, and I would give you instructions. You're not waiting because you're afraid? Where's your bitachon? Where's your bitachon? Right? Now, again, for us, that's hard to swallow. But Shmuel's point is that I'm the Navi, and you're the Melech. You got to have bitachon. Okay. We'll stop here for tonight. Yes, 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 exactly. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. And Mirtz Hashem tomorrow, next week, not tomorrow, next week, and Mirtz Hashem will pick up with the rest of Parak Yud Gimel, and we'll see what happens after this first fatal
mistake. Thank you, Rabbi.